Morning, everyone. I've got the sniffles a little bit, so I'll just try and manage that. So our topic for this semester is how to find balance and joy in the midst of change. But I am irreverently just going off topic, and I'm just going to talk about what I want to talk about. Which, what I'm really super excited about these days, as you might know, is interfaith dialogue. So, I'm very fortunate to be stepping into the role of the coordinator of the ADEAR Fellows Interfaith Dialogue, and also super fortunate that I am succeeding the amazing Aura Gladstone, who has sort of built this program and done a wonderful job. So I'm stepping into a well-oiled machine, but I thought I would just sort of riff a little bit on what really excites me about interfaith dialogue. I don't yet have a top 10 list about why interfaith dialogue is so awesome, but I have a top 3 list, so I'm getting there. The first I would just sum up in the word wisdom. All of the major faith and religious traditions of the world, as far as I can tell, are sitting on really deep wells of profound wisdom. And I think that's something we could use some of these days. So Karen Armstrong, a religious scholar, says, "All religions are designed to teach us how to live joyfully, serenely, and kindly in the midst of suffering." That would seem like a useful and good thing that would be especially useful in these days. So I don't know if you've heard this this acronym that's getting thrown around, VUCA, by social psychologists and sociologists. VUCA is volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity. Malfunction of the podium. Yes, see? Case in point. So some people are explaining why suddenly politics, not only here, but elsewhere, seems to be going haywire, because more and more people are experiencing this VUCA. All this wisdom that the world's religious traditions have to offer, I think, could speak to that really well, if we were willing to look. I may be somewhat inoculated to the wisdom tradition in my own religion, and so getting exposure to the interfaith scene may sort of give me fresh eyes to see wisdom from other sources and also to my own tradition. And I sort of think of it like having interfaith friendships is maybe like having a friend who works for your favorite retail store. They can give you the inside track to all the special deals and sales and, you know, get you discounts. and if you have people who are part of these other traditions, they can give you the inside track to the wisdom that's there. Number two is self-awareness. I'm pretty into self-awareness. I think all of the things I do in my work at MIT have a pretty strong self-awareness component. And I think that's a huge gift of interfaith dialogue. It's an incredible opportunity for growing in self-awareness. Especially if I didn't grow up exposed to other religions, if it was pretty monolithic where I grew up, by learning about other traditions, I'm going to actually learn more about my own tradition. And I'm going to learn more about what my tradition means to me. I'm going to have greater ownership of it. I'm going to have a much bigger context for all of that stuff. So as an example, in interfaith dialogue, somebody might ask me, like, "Oh, what's distinctive about your religion?" I'll say, "I don't know, let me think." Well, Jesus says to love, we should love our enemies. The person say, "Oh, okay, that's interesting. Why are you supposed to love your enemies?" And I'll say, "Oh, well, because why am I supposed to love my enemies?" So I'm starting to think about this. All kinds of questions can come up. Somebody might say, is it just like a good idea to love your enemies? Or are you like supposed to? You have to? So is Jesus like in charge and he gives orders, or is he giving good advice? How does that work? What happens if you don't love your enemies? What happens if you do? And what does it look like for you to love your enemies? How is this played out in your life? And so I'm going to get asked all these questions that I probably don't have a good answer for. And that's going to cause me to think and reflect and go a lot deeper with the things that I take for granted. And I think that's an incredible gift. And it reminds me of this quote I love from Mother Teresa, where she said, "I've always said that we should help a Hindu to become a better Hindu, a Muslim to become a better Muslim, a Catholic to become a better Catholic." And I think through this sort of dialogue and asking questions and getting to know each other, just that sort of thing is happening. And lastly, on my top three list, this may be a word that I'm coining. I'm not really sure if this is a real word, but I think interfaith dialogue has the power to be a de-othering force. So the person who is an other, who is different, who is separate from me, suddenly starts to have a human face and is no longer just an abstract category. And I think this is so important. This is crucially important for us not destroying ourselves as a species. So human brains, we've evolved in such a way that we need to have categories. We need to be able to put things into categories because we're taking in too much input all the time. And if we don't have little shortcuts to use, then, we'll just be fried. But the problem is that we can also have these strong and often unconscious tendencies towards tribalism, where sort of it's about my tribe over and against the other tribes. And I think it's something we have to be really careful with, especially with our religious identity. So apparently, there's now studies that demonstrate even by just self-applying some label to myself, I'm going to start to have a bias towards that label. And I'm going to start to filter out information that would sort of threaten me and sort of selectively take in information that will sort of like reinforce the goodness of that label that I apply. So this very quickly takes us into an us-them mentality. And I think it's a very slippery slope to judging and blaming and scapegoating. And all the while, what's happening is we're dehumanizing people. We're dehumanizing the other. Especially if we don't have exposure to actual people in these categories. This can just be reinforced really strongly. Where the other person, category of people, they're less human. And from there, I think we can justify pretty much any atrocity against those people. And unfortunately, obviously, our history is rife with examples of just that happening. Maybe our present is also filled with those examples. So I'm really excited and really passionate about the capacity for interfaith dialogue to be this de-othering force. And it's sort of a paradox because the whole thing is we're gathering to explore how we're different, how we're distinct. And so we're learning about those differences and distinctions. But I think at the same time, we're also learning at a deeper level how similar we are, how we share this common thing called humanity. So to close out, I'd like to share this little verse, which I'm a big fan of, by Edward Markham from his poem. "He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in."